Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to Changing the Conversation with Punch TV Studios CEO Joseph Collins. Listen live as we discuss the Punch TV Studios IPO 2.0, funding for your film, acting in film and television, new affiliate stations, and all things Punch TV Studios. Meet the stars of your favorite Punch TV Studios film and television shows and find out how you can be a part of the company that is revolutionizing media. Call 657-383-1974 and join in on the conversation. And now your host, Punch TV Studios CEO Joseph Collins.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Changing the Conversation with Punch TV Studios CEO, Mr. Joseph Collins. I am your co-host, Sharifa Hardy, and we have yet another amazing show for you today. We had to take a little break there and go ahead and get back on the air. So we are back. We will be live on the air. You can tune in again now every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to change in the conversation. If you're listening to the show on your phone and you like to join the conversation, please press 1. If you have a question, if you have a comment, and you want to get in the punch bowl, press 1 on your telephone. Now, if you're listening to the show on your computer and you want to join the conversation, then give us a call at 657-383-1974. Again, that number is 657-383-1974. And we are going to have yet another amazing show. And one of the main reasons that it's going to be so amazing is that we have some very special guests on our show today. We have our very own, our wonderful Abadala Youth and Abadala Youth for Me. Good morning, you guys. How are you?
Good morning.
We're great.
How are
you?
I am excellent. We are glad to have you on the show. And one of the reasons that we brought you on the show this morning is that you are actually going to, on a later show on Wednesday, take us down to Charlottesville in Charlottesville, Virginia, and actually get some interviews and talk to people who are on the ground there in Charlottesville, Virginia. But before we do that and before we get into Wednesday's show, let's talk about a little bit today about what exactly is going on in Charlottesville, Virginia. What's going on down there?
Well, you know, if you have the riot that took place this weekend, you had the KKK come in town along with a lot of Nazi and other Aryan groups to protest the Robert E. Lee statue that's held there at downtown Charlottesville, right down next to the federal courthouse. They came in because it was going to be taken down. This was something that was started, the shooting at the church in South Carolina. Since then, Nikki Haley, the governor, has ordered that the statue there be taken down along with Confederate flags, and that kind of followed suit up and down the East Coast. And Charlottesville was one of the next locations, and because of that, you had a lot of groups from out of town come in to protest the statue being taken down.
Okay. And again, what were the groups that came in to protest?
Well, you had a lot of folks who they claimed to be KKK. Of course, they didn't have hoods and stuff on, but they were in huge, huge groups. They were walking up and down the street, throwing bottles at even the pastors and reverends, the church community that was trying to speak out against what they were doing. We had a lot of not Aryan groups that came through, all of which you never could tell who is who walking around those streets. But I can tell you that in Charlottesville, there was one person that was killed because of this. Her name was Heather Heyer. She was a resident of Charlottesville, and she was one of the anti-protesters that was speaking out against these groups. She was ran over by a 20-year-old man.
Yes.
Yeah, she was ran over by a 20-year-old man from Ohio. And this is where I come to say that we here in America have not taught our children and raised our children properly to get rid of hate like this. Back in the 90s, where I used to be a police officer with Charlottesville Police Department, and it was there in the police department as well.
Okay. Well, we definitely want to talk about that, but let's go backwards a little bit and talk about Heather and the incident that occurred. One of the main reasons why many people are, I guess, watching this in Charlottesville is because it's very difficult for us to believe that this is something that is just happening today, you know, as opposed to something that happened in the 60s or the 70s or years past. This is happening right now today in Charlottesville. So the young lady wasn't just hit by a car by happenstance or accidentally, but the 20-year-old Ohio man actually steamrolled and intentionally rolled into or drove into the crowd of anti-protesters because of his beliefs. Is that correct?
Correct. That is totally correct. From what my understanding and from the reports and video that I've seen to releasing to go forward to run through the crowd. And just to do that, just to spin the wheels, I believe can demonstrate the hate that that particular individual had within him towards that crowd. And as he steamrolled into the crowd, then he kicked it into reverse after hitting the vehicle and another vehicle and backed up and hit more people on the way back out.
Yeah, I mean, now, it's so hard to believe that this is happening today, that this is happening in today's society in Charlottesville, Virginia, in the United States of America in 2017, that we're still dealing with these same issues.
Right. I did my last 2 years of high school in Charlottesville, and that was coming from Brooklyn, New York. First time I was ever called the N-word in Charlottesville on Prescott Avenue as I was crossing the street coming home from school one day, which really shocked me. I didn't know what to think of it. I remember speaking with my mother about it, and she said, yes, it still exists around here. It's just hidden. And a lot of folks get drinks in them, especially on the weekends. That's when you really start hearing it rev up. Even around the University of Virginia, which is a very, very prominent university, even around the University of Virginia, you have this. And with all the different police departments in the area, you would think that something like what happened this weekend wouldn't be able to happen. Myself, from a police point of view, I'm not sure why the vehicle or a police vehicle wasn't blocking off the street while the demonstrators were there to begin with. This is something that would have been done when I was there back in the 90s. I mean, we've had demonstrators many, many times while I worked there as a police officer, and nothing like this ever happened. But because of the embedment within the community, I think a lot of times things can be not planned for appropriately because of the mentality already that surrounds all of Charlottesville, all of Virginia, and, of course, the states below us. Slavery is also still hidden. I believe that, you know, racism is very, very much alive. Our president, Donald Trump, has made sure that those who felt that way during their election, and it has gotten worse since then. And I truly believe he should denounce it from the Oval Office, not from a hotel room. This is something that is deep in our culture, in American history, that he should be putting a stop to. And the leadership needs to come from the top down.
Okay. Now, there were several people who mentioned, or several news articles that mentioned that President Trump has not addressed it. Now, the White House has addressed it as domestic terrorism, but President Trump himself has not acknowledged it as domestic terrorism. What is the field like in Virginia now? What's going? What's the energy? What's the vibe? How are the people in Charlottesville now? So we have a little bit of technical difficulty, so we're here. So what's the feel in Charlottesville now?
Well, that's what I'm actually getting ready to go find out. I'm on the road currently on my way to Charlottesville. I've spoken to a lot of relatives. The streets are very, very tense. The residents are pretty much scared to do anything there in Charlottesville after dark. You don't know who to trust. You don't know who may say something to you because of this past weekend. Everyone kind of have emotions all over the place. I've made sure to tell my family to definitely stay in, only go out if you have to until this has died down some. Currently, as I stated, we're on the way up there to prepare for our Wednesday show. I want to be able to get in on the ground and make a lot of contact with folks that I know personally in the community and bring them forth to be able to talk about exactly what happened, how their emotions were, what conversations they have at a Charlottesville.
Now, being that you have actually lived in Charlottesville and you live in the surrounding areas, would you say that this is something that shocks you or surprises you, that people were actually taken to the streets in support of the KKK and the other Aryan and Nazi nationalists? Is this something that surprised you? Because I can tell you, you know, being at Punch TV Studios, we're in the Los Angeles area. In Los Angeles, California, to see, you know, hooded men walking down the street, it would be a shock. And I can most definitely say it wouldn't happen here. Is this something that surprises you, is more common there?
No, I wouldn't say that it's more common. Like I said, most that I remember in the past, and from what I remember my mother telling me as she was growing up, it's always been more or less hidden. I think, like I said, over this last year, their awareness that the election had brought forth to that particular community, talking about the KKK and the Aryan Nation, as well as our nationalists, it was just something that wasn't right there in your face. I mean, you might have felt it when you were employed by someone in that area. There's a lot of wealthy families around. There's a lot of plantations around there. So I don't think an outsider would look at it as it not happening at all. That, of course, it might be a possibility, but I don't think anyone would have thought that it would be as in your face as it was this weekend. It was definitely a huge, huge crowd. They had a lot of hate. They demonstrated that hate growing up school that we actually played at Robert E. Lee High School. And I recall almost every single time we went there to their hometown fight because of racist remarks when we left the game or, you know, track meets or basketball or football. There was always fights after the game, and it was all based on race. So I can tell you, out in the hills where Robert Lee towards Harrisonburg, Virginia, out towards where Broadway High School is, that community out there are predominantly white. Very few times that I've seen many, or even football teams. I mean, it was just huge, huge Southern country boys out there. And, They were big. I don't know what they ate, but you know, like I said, their mentality was totally, totally different. You would expect you would be able to talk to them about the game of sports versus having to speak on race because of our color.
No, that's definitely interesting. And then, okay, I just, you know, I'm just over here in shock about this entire situation. And in addition to Heather being killed by the car, there were 19 other people who were killed, or I'm sorry, I apologize, who were harmed or who were injured as well. There's a lot of footage going around showing the car striking from different angles, and a lot of people were injured. Do you think that this is a reflection of where we are ever since President Trump came in office and is just coming out, or is this just one isolated incident where, you know, it's not reflective of the United States as a whole?
I believe this particular incident is directly related to his communication to America. I think prior to this incident, all of his tweets did nothing but fuel the mind of those who think with hate. And it just led them to come to Charlottesville, a place where Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, I mean, Charlottesville is a very historical city directly related to the White House. There's not one place you can go around Charlottesville that doesn't give you a presidential route to the White House, where someone from that area that became president, one of our founders, that's why I think this is so huge, because this is outside of Washington, D.C. This is outside of Congress. This is showing what Americans are dealing with in a major city where Confederate flags are allowed. Open carry is allowed. They were out there with rifles and machine guns, automatic weapons. I've never been any place where you're allowed to do that as a police officer. I don't understand how my fellow law enforcement officers there at Charlotte Police Department even felt to know that they were outgunned. And they truly were. They truly were outgunned dealing with this situation. Even though the state police came in, and I do want to say, send my condolences that we lost, that was monitoring the incidents up there around Charlottesville, the helicopter crash, and they passed. But back to the racism there in Charlottesville and why this particular incident, I think, to take front stage, and I even made a point to did a post on Facebook to state that Charlottesville is where the racism and it's going to come to an end. It's going to be the start. And if I live another 100 years, that's all I'm working in, is to make sure that there in the 90s, I had already seen it within the city government. It's in the city government, then it makes it a whole lot easier for something like this to happen, because of course planning would not be right for what was to come. You know, they knew the folks were coming, but they didn't plan correctly. Now, I don't know how you would necessarily plan, but I can tell you, you could take a patrol car and block off intersections so that no one can drive through it into a crowd. That can be done.
Now, basically, especially with your police background, do you believe that there are so many conspiracy theories going around, and we can't talk about all of them, but there are some people who are of the belief that the police didn't do more, because the police are the same ones that are in the demonstration. You know, these are their brothers that are actually out there in the KKK and the Nazis, so they wanted them to have free reign to do whatever they wanted to do. Or are you one of those people who are of the mindset that it was just an oversight on their part and they never thought things would get that drastic?
Well, I'm going to tell you it was both. Because of my relationship with the department and knowing those personally in the department, I understood that there were some who did have some cues that probably shouldn't have been law enforcement. However, I'm not going to sit here and say that they definitely played a part in it, but I can tell you I think they could have planned better. I think this situation did not have to happen. If you know the location of where it happened, there's no reason it had to happen. I've seen them block off the downtown mall for us to have parties, and which we would consider in Brooklyn, New York, like a block party. Even the businesses was open, and people were drinking. And this was something that used to be done every Friday. I think they used to call it Friday After Bob, where everybody would go down to the downtown mall and just have a ball. And this was really no different. Yes, there was folks out there protesting. They had guns, but you could have still put preliminary vehicles in the way of keeping other vehicles from coming in. Most law enforcement departments do that in any city I've ever been in. I heard someone else talking.
No. I'm listening to you.
Okay. So, I think the police have, I would say, maybe a slight mishap on their oversight of what was to come. I really do believe they could have prepared a whole lot better. You know, I'm not going to speak against the police department, but I'm very disappointed in what took place because of the proximity of the police department to the incident to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I mean,
now,
we're talking not even less than a block away. The police department was.
Now, there's a photo going around of a very angry-looking young man who was a part of the protest. It went viral. Now, afterwards, the young man by the name of Peter Chvechnovic made a statement. He said, Charlottesville photo, man shouting angrily at white supremacist rally insists he is not an angry racist. The article goes, it's actually on one of the news magazines, but the article also continues and goes on to say that his reason for being there is because he felt that the statue of Robert E. Lee should not have been taken down and that there were many things that Robert E. Lee had done that were positive, and so that his history, his record should not be destroyed. So, again, he came back, this young man, 20-year-old Peter, and said, I'm not a racist. I'm just standing up for what I believe in. I also know from what they consider the Twitter sphere and social media, a lot of people who were photographed at the rally, participating in the rally, have been their photos, numbers, addresses have been passed along social media, and I've seen that at least one person has been fired from their jobs because people are contacting the employers and saying, you have a racist working for you, and the people are getting fired. What are your thoughts on Peter saying he's not a racist? What are your thoughts on some of the responses that people have to it? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I start with this. Romans crucified Jesus Christ, right? But they felt like they were doing what was right at the time. Timing is everything. And historically, racism has been going on for many, many, many hundreds of years. However, what was allowed then may not be allowed now. And that's what folks want to understand, that the time that we live in today, you're not allowed to be a racist. If you live in this country, you are not allowed to be a racist. You must depend on one another for a better future. And if you're a racist, I can't depend on you. And that brings it back to where, when I was at the police department, you had that type of relationship where you work with white. And it wasn't many. I think the 18th black that was hired at the department, and I was hired under a federal grant. And you worked with folks that you knew that when stuff hit the fan, they didn't have your back. And you knew that going in. Even though they were police officers, you think at one point in time that no matter what, you know, the Brotherhood of Blue is going to be there for you through and through, but that's not always the case. And that's the way it is around the country. You have officers positions that don't belong. Just like you had that gentleman working at that job, and folks was calling in to let his boss know that he was a racist. Sometimes you don't know right away as an employer. Sometimes that goes hidden for many, many years, and you don't find out until they get to a higher position where they're hiring and firing people.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that when you were on the police force, you knew that some of the police officers did not have your back. Now, how did you make that determination? Was it just something that was unsaid? Did someone, you know, when you were a rookie, pull you to the side and say, let me tell you how this works? What was it that brought that to your awareness?
Well, after talking to a lot of the older elders that were black on the police force, you know, from the 60s on up, because Charlottesville is a place where my mother grew up, I knew a lot of the officers, you know, the black officers who were in the community through my mother or my aunt. But when we're working with them, I've also seen it when you respond to a call, especially if it was in a black neighborhood. There was times where you might be waiting 2 or 3 minutes for that other officer to show up, and you're not understanding why he ain't got there yet. But when there's anything else going on, they're right on the spot. Or you see them over there, you know, drinking coffee, just kind of standing around. I've seen this take place time and time again when I was there in Charlottesville. I mean, I've worked several different law enforcement jurisdictions. And when I moved out to the country and I was at a search department, it was different. Because out there, you have to depend on your officer. So whether they were white or black, I knew I could count on them, and they were out in the country. But the ones that I worked with in the city was the ones I couldn't count on. I had an incident where I took a guy down and wanted to have knee surgery, but it took my sergeant, who was white, a minute to get there, and then when he once got there, he didn't do anything. I had to pull my weapon to keep the crowd away from me while I was trying to handcuff the guy on the side of a hill, and he was just panicked. He wasn't trying to push the crowd back, and that made me feel at the end of my life even more so because I had this huge crowd approaching as I'm trying to arrest this guy who stabbed his girlfriend with a little pitchfork into it, you know.
Okay, so let me ask you this. You one of the things that you said is you'd get out and you would wait for one of the police officers to arrive to assist you, and that police officer never showed up.
Well, I wish they didn't show up, but they were very slow to get there.
Okay. In these type of instances where they were very slow to get there, was this a common occurrence? Was this, this is something that's just understood. So if they didn't show up or they took a long time to get there, there were no consequences, there were no repercussions, this is just something that you had to deal with.
Yeah, I've never seen any repercussions. And like I said, you know, a lot of times in Charlottesville, there may have been two officers working at the same time. You might have had, and I'm talking about black officers, you might have had maybe a lieutenant and then maybe one black officer out on the street. I can only think of maybe one shift that I remember two black officers being on at the same time, and that would generally be the night shift. One of them was used to be in a paddy wagon, and one and that's just the way it went. I don't know why that was. I know we only had maybe 114 officers at the time for all of Charlottesville. And then on the outside of Charlottesville, you have Albemarle County Police Department as well as their Sheriff Department. And City of Charlottesville also has a Sheriff Department. And University of Virginia has a Police Department. So there's a lot of law enforcement right there. But very seldom do those other jurisdictions help out unless it goes into their jurisdiction. Now, in the situation that I was in when I was taking this guy down, it was a black neighborhood. It was known to be a black neighborhood. I was the first officer to get there, officer to be called there. They called, I passed for backup. I had already arrived. where I was already on the ground and I was walking around and then going after the gentleman who was involved in the stabbing. And then this is when my sergeant showed up, but he was next to his car, not next to me.
Okay. Okay. Now, what I want to talk a little bit more about is some of the solutions, some of the suggestions that can be made. So what we're going to do is we're going to stop for a brief commercial break. If you are just now tuning in to Changing the Conversation, we are discussing the uprise in Charlottesville, Virginia this morning. If you're listening to the show on the line and you'd like to join the conversation in the punch bowl, please press 1. Remember, press 1. If you're listening to the call on your computer and you'd like to join the conversation, feel free to give us a call at 657-383-1974. Again, that number is 657-383-1974. And please press 1 so we know you want to join that conversation. And we will be right back after this brief commercial break.
Are you an actor looking for your next role? Are you looking to audition to be cast in the next Hollywood project? One amazing way to do this is to work with Punch TV Studios, making movies and making magic. Join the actors group at Nabuki.com to find out about upcoming film projects and opportunities. It's a great place to network. Do you, Nabuki?
I'm Joseph Collins, CEO of Punch TV Studios. We have a network of television stations around the country. And today, we are proud to announce that we have just launched our newest television station across all of Southern California. KILM is the new Punch TV. Check your local listings on Direct, Dish, Spectrum, Charter, Frontier, and over the air for free. From the desert to the sea, it's Punch TV. For more information on the second phase of the Punch TV Studio stock offering for only $1 per share, call 310-419-5914, 310-419-5914, or log on to PunchTVStudios.com. That's PunchTVStudios.com.
Investing in IPO carries a degree of risk. There is no guarantee that your investment will be secure. Do not invest if you cannot afford to lose your investment.
As a filmmaker, you're brimming with ideas. But do you need help bringing your ideas to life? That's where Punch TV Studios comes in. We offer independent filmmakers a place to call home, as well as practical help, advice, resources, support, and most importantly, funding. Join the filmmakers group at Nabuki.com and network with industry professionals. Do you, Nabuki?
Thank you for joining us. We're back from the break, and we are discussing the Charlottesville, Virginia uprising. So the question on the table is, again, this is 2017, and for us as a people, us as a nation, to be still going through these things, what can we do to solve these race issues, in your opinion?
Well, That's an interesting question, because in the 90s I tried. I got all of these black. We brought forth a lawsuit against the department for racism under non-equal pay. We had officers who were named a sergeant in human resource paperwork, but never paid. Almost 10 years. And it wasn't until I went and grabbed all the paperwork from human resource that I was able to find out that one of the officers was a sergeant. I went to him and asked him, did you know you were a sergeant? He told me he didn't know. I said, are you being paid for a sergeant? And I said, well, you should have been paid for a sergeant. This date right here on your paperwork from human resources. So we got together with one of the Rockefeller attorneys outside of Times Square. I flew all the officers up there after receiving donations from a lot of folks throughout the community. Just for that reason, to bring a change to the Charlottesville Police Department at the time, which I had thought would help out with the community. Because in the community, there is not enough black officers for the community. You know, it's based off percentage of white in the community and percentage of black and another minority. So they cater to the police department, and they're hiring around those percentages. So if they had maybe 100,000 blacks, you might maybe have 10 black officers, you know. But if there's 500,000 whites, then, of course, that would fill the rest of the village for the other officers to deal with that population as well, because you don't want to create that racial tension between the police department and the community. And this happened all over America, where that same thing, where you're sending the wrong police officer into the wrong jurisdiction, and it goes bad, and it goes bad very, very quickly. I think on a national level, the police officers, the department, and the Justice Department needs to really have a serious, serious talk of what to do within policing community, because it's not the same as it was in the 60s, you know, where you could just walk around and beat somebody outside the head with a billy club or spray them down with water. That's not allowed. And I think there are still officers and family members who used to be law enforcement who are talking to those relatives who are currently law enforcement, that is kind of keeping this edginess of how to be a police officer, you know, in regards to what community you work in, how you treat the folks in that community. It needs to be a lot of schooling. They go to school for everything else. You know, you go to school, become, a rep alcohol, tester or Black Closet 5000, whatever they call it now, but, you know, doing DUIs and stuff. You can get that training. They should have sensitivity training mandatory at least once a month at every single police department in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And with doing so, they should be bringing the community in to help with that training.
Mm-hmm. And when you say sensitivity training, are we just talking about sensitivity to the different races, or sensitivity to the people in the community, sensitivity to profiling? What are we specifically discussing when we say sensitivity training?
Well, when I say sensitivity training, I mean the whole conglomerate of whether it's dealing with race, whether it's dealing with, profiling is because of race, you know, or because of a lifestyle. That's how a lot of drug dealers get pinched, because they live this certain lifestyle, and it gives them a certain profile or prominence in the community. So that kind of leads them toward, hey, they're dealing drugs, and they're driving this kind of car. And so once that came about, you know, it made it totally easy for officers to pull folks over. You know, if you got a nice car, first thing they're going to do is see if you got your state inspection sticker. If you don't have that, now they're going to use that as a stop. The probable cause that is utilized now to stop people on the street, a lot of times it's not really because they're doing anything wrong. You know, a lot of times I think folks get messed with for just driving and they're on their way to work because they fit a profile. Not because they did anything wrong, but just because they fit a profile. Or they're in an area at a certain time of night in a nice vehicle where they shouldn't be. Or the police officers there, who may be white, might think they shouldn't be there, even though they might own a $400,000 home down the street. You know, I've seen YouTube videos where a gentleman who was a real estate agent, you know, he had a nice house. He was driving on his way home to his home. Police officer stopped him, didn't believe it was his house. Actually walked in. And that's on YouTube.
Wow.
You know?
Search for that one and look for that one. But again, what we're trying to look at and see is, are these anomalies, or is this just the standard of where we are in America these days? This is what's going on in Charlottesville, Virginia, a representative of, does it represent how America is feeling right now? You know, usually when something happens or there's a certain kind of underlying feeling of anxiety or frustration with American people, then all of a sudden you see these, like you had the L.A. riots years ago and, you know, riots break out. So do you think this is an indication of how American people are feeling at this time?
I definitely do. And this would be a great time for the Americans who do feel that way to speak out. I think they should call into Blog Talk Radio and talk to Punch TV and let the American people who are listening hear their opinions and their emotions, because it's gone unsaid for so long. And with the Internet, there's no reason that any person wants life, but they won't voice the opinions to do what's right. And since the sensitivity training, like I said, that doesn't only take care of the racism. That also takes care of disabled veterans who are having to deal with police officers coming to their home who have post-traumatic stress disorder, and the police officer trying to intimidate them or put hands on them, and the first thing the veteran is going to do is fight back. You know, and I've seen that where I live at in Gates County, North Carolina. I've seen three different individuals lose their benefits simply because of the sheriff's department not knowing how to deal with them when they got to their house.
So,
you know,
there's a specific way that they have to be dealt with.
Well, there's a certain courtesy, one, you should show when you arrive. And that veteran generally is going to expect that courtesy because they fought for their country. And they expect that the law enforcement officer that is coming to their home is paramilitary, so they would expect more open communication versus such a hard stance that a lot of times I think veterans find when they deal with law enforcement officers. Like I said, the sensitivity training, that's all up and down the board. That goes from administration within departments and city management to the police officers on the street, or even the 911 operators, or the ones that's working in records department, you know, just doing the fingerprinting for folks who are looking for jobs. They have to go get a fingerprint, you know, record to bring back for their employer, a background check. I think sensitivity training up and down the board needs to be done from the Justice Department down to the street level law enforcement. And it needs to be done on such a scale that it's so transparent that nothing can be hidden. I mean, we have laws, but those laws are few, and those laws are tainted, and they have to pick from. They must do the sensitivity training along with the law enforcement department and the community to work on this problem together, just like you would do if there's a bad school district and you want to make sure these kids get better grades and have better teachers. You got to get together and have a conversation. And that's why I love this radio show called Changing the Conversation. And we can start here today with Charlottesville. And that's why I'm on my way up there right now.
Okay. And when will you be in Charlottesville?
It is 1:45 on my end. I will be there around 4:30 this evening.
Okay, okay. So
and I'll be there over the next day.
Okay. What do we do as a people? Because we have a few minutes left on the show, so we talked a little bit about some of the things that happened in Charlottesville. We talked about the people who were steamrolled with the car, but we talked about some of the improvements that the police force can make in general through their processes and procedures. But what are there any recommendations or thoughts that we can do as a people, as a community, to make things different?
Well, right now, as a community, I think we could utilize Nabuki and the blogging through Nabuki and the posting through Nabuki to have the community talk to us. I think they should come to Nabuki.com, the city of Charlottesville, the community of Charlottesville, speak to us about their opinions, give us some of their opinions and some of the things that they call all of Charlottesville. What I can do is ask all Charlottesians to call into the show. I can ask them to go to Nabuki.com and share their story of what they've been going through. Since whether you just moved to Charlottesville, whether you're native to Charlottesville, or you just have family members in Charlottesville and you know their story. it needs to be told. People need to stop keeping these things to themselves and only passing it down to their family members before they die of what struggles they had. They need to speak out about their struggles, explain to their children as they're growing up so their children know what to expect and know what to look for. Because right now, the way I see it, getting in to a dangerous situation, if Charlottesville situation is not picked. And I say Charlottesville in general because it's right there, right next to the birth of the nation, and it speaks so much on how the White House even began. And if we can't fix it in Charlottesville, then we're not going to be able to fix it in D.C. or in the White House of our current president.
So you have so we're going to be back in or broadcasting in Charlottesville definitely on Wednesday, but are we going to speak to some people on Tuesday as well?
Well, I'm going to be uploading videos going to Nabuki over this probably this whole week. It's going to start this evening, and I'm going to also try to speak with my grandmother and see how comfortable she feels speaking on air. If she doesn't want to speak on air, then I just record an audio and then upload that to Nabuki. But I know my grandmother had struggles growing up there around Charlottesville. I think the last grade my grandmother went to was maybe sixth grade, but she was also a nurse over at the University of Virginia Hospital, and she worked under Dr. McHugh. Dr. McHugh was the leading pediatric surgeon there for the University of Virginia's football team and their athletes. So I value his opinion and my grandmother's opinion in that community a whole lot. I've learned so much from the two of them. In fact, Dr. McHugh was one of those that donated so I could get these officers to New York to meet with an attorney. And we did file EELT in Richmond, you know, so we did everything right, and the lawsuits were filed. There was some good that came out of that particular incident with, you know, filing the lawsuit, where some folks kind of got their pay adjusted, some promotions kind of came, you know, different individuals' ways. That wasn't enough. That was kind of a Band-Aid over a heart attack. And that don't work.
Yes, I can definitely see that. So where is the case now? What's the status of what's going on with the case?
Well, as far as all the different lawsuits that took place in the 90s, I'm not sure of everybody else's case. I know with mine, it went to the federal court. Mine was for a principal. I think it was filed, I believe it was $1 million. Against the Charlottesville Police Department in the city of Charlottesville, but it was a principal and it was just going on there. Because I was still raising my children, I didn't have time to keep fighting these jokers in court, and I had to keep on making money to take care of my family. But and I also had knee surgery. I had ACL reconstruction, so I didn't care much about the money. My whole thing was the principal and make a point as to what needs to be changed here in Charlottesville and at the police department. The other officers, I haven't spoken to them in such a long time. We got to remember this was in 96 and 97, and here we are 20 years later, and we're still dealing with the same situation on a broader scale. Like I said, the racism was there, but the majority of the time it had been hidden. You would find it under employers and employment situations where folks were being fired for certain reasons that weren't reasons at all. So my best guess right now is to see what's going to happen this week. And I'm sure within the next month there's going to be a lot more lawsuits filed. Generally, not just against the Charlottesville Police Department, from the community, which I know is going to happen because Ms. Heyer did not deserve to die.
Yes.
No one deserves to die, and she should definitely not have been taken because of this right here. And that could have been prevented. And if I got to stand there in court for her, I sure would, to let them know that they could have put a police car at the end of that street, to make sure something like that don't happen. Those are folks walking around. And folks just can't.
Absolutely,
it's a two-ton vehicle.
Absolutely not.
It's a two-ton vehicle that came and rained down on a crowd of people who did not know it was going to happen. They couldn't have dreamed of something like that happening. But I can tell you one department there that should have thought about that situation just because it was people and bodies on the street, and you have to protect those bodies from anything that moves, and that would be vehicles.
That is correct.
They're allowed to walk around there with all their guns. Yeah, they're allowed to walk around with all their guns and the automatic weapons. Then it should have been a police car at the end of the street to make sure they couldn't bring in a bigger weapon.
Definitely.
Kind of upset about this. I really am upset about this. It was a waste of life. It really was. You know, I hope that this situation becomes a bigger because of her and what she had to go through and what her family's going through, along with those two troopers that were lost. Those folks lost their life over hate. And that's the bottom line.
For absolutely no reason. Absolutely no reason. That's why here at Punch TV Studios, what we do as a media company is we want to make sure that we tell all these stories so that people don't forget the things that are happening and things that are happening today in Charlottesville. We want to talk to some of the people and maybe discuss making some movies in the future about the people there in Charlottesville, maybe something about what's going on today. But these are the things that need to be exposed. These are the things that more people need to be aware of, because if we open it up and allow people to take a good look at what's going on there in Charlotte, then we can get all the bad, negative aspects out and make it into a more harmonious destination.
Right. The folks of Charlotte are really loving. They really are, you know. But you always want to have a handful of bad folks. And majority of the folks that were involved weren't from Charlottesville. They were outside. They came there to create a problem. And that's the wrong city to create a problem in. You're going to create a problem there, then you create a problem with my whole family, and I take that personally.
Yes. So where did the majority of the people come from?
My understanding, like that gentleman was from Ohio. There had been a rally earlier this year that came through Charlottesville, and they made it a point to say that they were going to come back this past weekend and do it again. They go bigger and better than what they did before. So they, just like we're trying to do, we're trying to corral our minorities, talk about the problem. They corral their people, come there, and create a problem. They didn't want to talk about a problem. They didn't want to solve a problem. They didn't really care about the statue. They wanted to create as much ruckus and hate as they could. And that's what they did. And they didn't just do it to the black community. They did it to the white community. They did it to all of Charlottesville. And Charlottesville is not going to stand for that. They're just, I mean, like I said, that's my mother's, you know, she was raised there. My grandmother's there. And, you know, and I spent many, many, many years there traveling on trailways to go to Charlottesville for a two-month vacation during the summertime or spring breaks from Brooklyn, New York. You know, so I value it as if it was my own hometown, even though I only did 2 years of high school there. My sister did elementary and up, you know, so she came behind me there. And I have nephews and nieces there and aunts and cousins. And I'm not going to let this group that came to town this past weekend destroy the love that Charlottesville represents, the happiness that you see when you walk around Charlottesville and everyone's eyes. Like I said, there is a problem there of race, but it had always been hit. It never came to the forefront. And this, all it did was bring it to the forefront. It has taken those that was keeping it to themselves and made them speak out about it. So now you have these last few days where there's all this turmoil going on in Charlottesville. And they don't even know why they argue it because they're not really having the right.
What are some of the conversations they should be having?
Well, like I said, I believe, first of all, the conversation should have been to keep a group like that out of a city. That should have been a first conversation before they even arrived. They should have been talking about that a month ago. That should not have happened. I understand the freedom of speech. I do. But there's no freedom of speech when you're speaking of hate crime and speaking out loud against another race. That's not freedom of speech.
Yes, yes, I
if
definitely
it was,
agree.
You couldn't go to jail for it. You couldn't have laws against it. So it's definitely not freedom of speech.
Exactly. I mean, I definitely agree. I definitely agree. So this week, today, on today's episode of Changing the Conversation, we are discussing the uprising in Charlottesville, Virginia. We have A Bottle of Youth and A Bottle of Youth for Me joining us on the line this week, Tuesday and Wednesday. We're also going to be talking to people in Charlottesville, Virginia. We're going to get the word on the street. We're going to find out how the Charlottesville people feel. Hopefully we can get your grandmother to join us on a radio show and talk about how long she's been in Charlottesville and her thoughts. But we are going to have yet another amazing show tomorrow, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So let's have a few brief words to sum up today's show. Just a few final parting words.
Well, I would like to say, just brief us, that I do feel like the leaders of our community should call out the hate group, and they should be dispersed. So
okay.
I would really love to see that. I would really love to see the hate group, I mean, be called out for what they are and be dispersed.
Yes.
And just like the folks are posting online now, I think folks, should, if they have information, they should go ahead and post to the Boogie. Let everybody in the Boogie and in the world know what's going on in Charlottesville today, tonight, tomorrow. We will be there on Wednesday to continue this conversation. I will be arriving around 4:30, 5 o'clock this evening in Charlottesville to kind of put some feet on the ground and exactly find out what's being talked about and get back with you this evening. I will contact you during the Boogie to let you know what I have lined up for tomorrow. And anyone who's listening to this show, please, please call in if you have any stories to share. If you live in Charlottesville, around Charlottesville, Alamore County, and speak on your thoughts, your opinions, and your feelings.
That's right. We want to hear it straight from you. Tune in tomorrow on the next episode of Changing the Conversation at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Until then.
Thank you for listening to Changing the Conversation with Punch TV Studios CEO Joseph Collins. Tune in Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time as we continue to change the conversation in contemporary media. To be a guest or to share your thoughts on changing the conversation, visit nabuki.com today. Don't miss out on the opportunity to be a part of the company that's revolutionizing media. Visit punchtvstudios.com to become a part owner at $1 per share.